propose that she put on the agenda, you know, something that duplicates the Sonoma guidelines and also provides some real support and tells the DEA to get lost, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that she's mostly in a pretty good place when it comes to, being opposed to the DEA busting the clubs and arresting people. I think that...
It's just her own sheriff's department. She has trouble standing up to.
I think that that's somewhat. She's trying to stay in, in a better light with the sheriff. The sheriff has said that he's handling this thing very, very well, and the number of arrests bears that out. I mean, he's not really doing that terrible of a job as far as actually arresting and sentencing. You know, the DA is not prosecuting these cases. Mm-hmm. They're really respecting the law.
However, I got to tell you that I heard this horrible presentations last night about the by Bob Lee and Kate Canlis, and both of them were, you know, priding themselves on what great tough people they were, and none of them had any anything to say about ending the drug war or taking any meaningful action. I mean, they had the usual flip comments about, oh, well, we don't want to prosecute people for possession of less than an ounce. But of course, since most of the money and much of the misery created by the courthouse happens because of the drug war machine that's going on in our county every day, I was not impressed, and I couldn't support either of the candidates, and told them they had to come forth with some kind of really new program, which really involves changing the priorities of our judicial system. And this goes beyond medical marijuana, of course. It goes to recreational marijuana as well. And that one of the problems is separating these two issues. Though it's provided a wedge, it has also wedged people apart, and that's always the problem there.
Yes, yes, that's right. Well, we're always marching forward, you know, with a few little steps back. Well, and we just are, you know, hoping that the DEA will, stand back.
Hear the roar of the people. We've been talking with Andrea Tisler at 466-0420. If you'd like to call her and volunteer to help with proposed changes to give the medical marijuana patients here some guidelines that might actually allow them a kind of a uniform standard where they can actually be assured of not being harassed for growing their own medication. And you can also reach Andrea at reservations@compassionflowerinn.com. Thank you very much for being with us.
Well, thank you, Robert, and I hope you have a very nice rest of the evening, and a happy Valentine's Day.
And the same to you.
All right, bye-bye. All right,
bye-bye. You're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. Lines are finally open, though we may be receiving another call soon from Scott Immler down in Los Angeles. And again, we're expecting a call from Jenny Jett in Isla Vista. She's going to be talking about Rainbow Energy Systems, which is the group of campers, interestingly named, who have been kind of doing a small camp paradise type operation down in Isla Vista, California. And I've actually been following some of their discussions on the internet. A fellow named Chris Osmer has been sending emails up. And I talked to Jenny today on the phone. Hope that she will get through to us. They've been, for years, apparently, according to her report, going through normal channels, going to the county, homeless task force meetings, park district meetings, town hall meetings, redevelopment agency meetings, meetings, redistricting meetings, and then beginning, of course, the usual deaf ears. And as I've told people here at Camp Paradise, and I hear from people up in Dignity Village in Portland, Oregon, which is the clean and sober homeless-run encampment up there that's been going for more than a year, the way you succeed at this is you don't ask permission, you ask forgiveness. You do it. And then when they don't like it, you point out that you have no other choice. And if they have other suggestions, you're happy to listen to them. But in the meantime, there is a necessity for camping for a lot of people, whether it's in a vehicle or in a tent or outside. People need places to be. We have an incoming call now. Hey, you're on Free Radio.
Hey, Robert, it's Jeff. I know you're waiting for a call from Scott, and I actually am on my way to the symphony tonight, but I wanted to... This just in, I got an alert, DEA bus up in San Francisco on Tuesday. Do you know about that?
Yeah, we actually have just been talking about that.
Okay, great.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, all right, very well.
Hey, you have a good symphony, and please call back if you've got more you want to say.
For sure.
Hey, talk to you later.
Okay, bye.
Bye-bye.
Yeah, that was Fiddler Jeff. He's been working on the Huff website. The Huff website, that's Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, a civil rights group I work with. If you want more information about Huff, you can always give a call to 423-HUFF, 423-4833. And the Huff website, I wish I had that with me. I think it's huffsomething at yahoo.com. And so if you go on to Google or do a search engine, you can probably find it. Or maybe we're getting an incoming call on that now.
Free radio here.
Join Huff at yahoo.com.
Thank you very much.
Send an email up, and it'll give you the website, and it'll tell you how to join.
Join Huff at yahoo.com.
Yep.
Thank you.
Just send an email there, and that'll take care of it. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Another way to join Huff, of course, is come to the Huff meeting Wednesday nights, actually Wednesday mornings, at Baker's Square, 8:30 in the morning at 1107 Ocean Street, 11:30 a.m. Yeah, I know it's early, but there you have it. And you can also come to the Huff UCSC meeting, which meets every Wednesday at 6 o'clock in the evening, if you're more of an evening person, up on campus, second floor of the Student Center up there on campus. And, of course, again, the Huff number to call, the Huff line, is 423-HUFF, 423-4833. And this is still Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3. And if you want to call in and grab a quick thing to say, we're going to kind of cut you short because, we're waiting for calls from out of the area. But you can give us a call at 427-3772, 427-FRSC. So, very interesting trial, I should say appeal, that went down today in court with the case of Jerry Henry. And I'm actually going to do a quick interview, if I can, with Attorney Kate Wells, who was in court during that trial. We'll see if she's around. I'm ringing her now and see if we can get a little something going here. Jerry Henry is a man who was taken to court for trespass with intent to interfere with a business at the Aptos Rancho Del Mar Shopping Center, and disturbing the peace, and a series of other charges like that. It looks like we may be getting an answering number, an answering machine, and not be getting her on the line. So I'm going to have to wait on that. But there was an appeal that was being considered. Henry was held on a $100,000 bail, the highest bail I've ever heard of for nonviolent charges, mainly because the merchants of the Rancho Del Mar Shopping Center were just intent on getting rid of this bearded guy. You occasionally see him down at the Hippie Planter area, down at New Leaf Market area, because he's sort of a pastor, a street minister to younger people. He's advised people on how to get off drugs. He's advised them of their civil rights. He's in the minds of some, a deep spiritual thinker, but he's also a man who's outspoken against social and economic cleansing. That is to say, the kind of stuff that's going on at New Leaf Market, the planter, where there is this plan soon to be fulfilled of putting in an iron wrought fence around the whole planter, expanding the Sushi Now and Alibaba's Cafe seating area, dining area, to essentially exclude the public sitting area where people are now sitting, the young people are sitting, which gets rid of a social problem, as some see it, and a vibrant scene, as others see it. And that's a concern. In fact, what we're going to do now is play a little tape of that scene. This is from February 6th, about a week ago, a little bit more. And we'll pick up a few vignettes of what was going on down there. Actually, I just want to say before we do that earlier you remember hearing John Teal King talk about being attacked by a thug yesterday at the farmer's market. And I mentioned that I myself was attacked by a thug, a different thug, I believe, who engaged in pretty serious stuff and got essentially a slap on the wrist for what he did, and a very quick slap on the wrist without the victims being notified or stay-away orders or anything. And I'm not even complaining in the sense that saying that, I mean, actually, I've seen this guy around since, and he hasn't bothered me, he hasn't attacked me, he hasn't been abusive toward me. And his friends tell me he was drunk. He didn't seem drunk or high or some such thing. And he just said had a bad day and broken up with his girlfriend and had some problems. And that can happen to all of us or any of us. although the level of violence he showed was pretty incredible, and you know, it was serious stuff at the time, or it seemed that way to me, and even more so to the person whose nose was bloodied when he stepped between us and stopped this man from assaulting me. But what I noticed was the differential way that these cases are treated, how this guy gets off very quickly. Actually, it's kind of similar. And the situation for the assailant of John Teelking, I mean, it worries me that we don't have a record of his arrest and so forth. Also, I want to note that I went to the police station today to get a report about my complaint against the hosts and the redevelopment agency, and specifically Terry Butler, who's not a bad guy. He's the African-American host downtown. That's people in the purple uniforms running around snitching on people. And, I'm not saying Terry is primarily a snitch. The hosts are snitches. There's not much you can do about it. Their job is to harass people who are sitting down, to harass people who are dressed in a certain way, and to enforce the downtown ordinances, and also to go after minor drug deals. It's a pretty sordid kind of stuff they're doing, and it's something I'd like to see eliminated in favor of a conflict resolution, and different kinds of real hospitality would be nice, instead of this bogus painted smile under which you have the iron fist, which is what you got downtown. But in any case, you may remember the classical music controversy downtown, where the city was blasting out classical music to eliminate those disreputable hippie youth skateboard kids downtown, and hacky sackers, all these big-time criminals who are there disturbing the businesses of Alibaba's Cafe and Sushi Now, and terrorizing the residents and the New Leaf Market. Of course, they're doing nothing of the kind. Generally, there were some problems that happened that I'd like to see resolved, but nothing that would justify elimination of a group of people. And they were doing this rather amusing classical music war against them, and that was fine. No big deal. The real issue, of course, was not the classical music war, but the seizure of the public sidewalks, the privatization, and the wrought iron fence, which, of course, Good Times and the other Metro Santa Cruz and the Sentinel didn't really talk about much, because that would be, the real issue, and who wants to talk about the real issues? Let's just get rid of them first, and then afterward we'll say, oh, gee, I guess they're gone, and then move on to the next thing. In any case, Alibaba's Cafe, Ali Ka, the fellow who runs Alibaba's Cafe, has been notorious for going after musicians nearby, street musicians, who play unamplified music or drums, and he has his own guitarist who comes in and plays guitar there, and plays guitar very well, I might add. Maybe just be a friend of his who walks by, but he doesn't require an entertainment permit, even though he's playing at a cafe. He just plays on, and he should. But when people outside his cafe attempt to play music or drums, he goes over and threatens to arrest them and have them cited or citizen arrested for excessive noise. So what I did was, I was getting a little tired of having this classical music blasted as I was trying to talk to people, registering them to for my boycott petition, even also registering them to vote if they wanted to vote, and talking about issues like the sleeping ban at this table I had at the in front of the New Leaf Market. So I and Dan Hopkins went into the host center several weeks ago. I've already talked about this on the air, and I filed a complaint. I asked Officer Bailey to take a complaint against the individual, Terry Butler, who was in fact in charge of the music. And Terry and I have no hostility towards each other. I acknowledge, this is his job. He's doing his job. I mean, I will call him out for his job, because it's a bad job that he's doing, in the sense that it's a person doing a job that does not have good results. And it's primarily this para-police thing. But in any case, the officer wrote out the ticket, wrote out the citation. He was even reluctant to tell me Butler's name, but I got Butler's name finally. And I went down and got the police report just tonight. I finally was able to secure the police report, and I learned that Officer Bailey, on his own initiative, had dropped all charges. He's not the district attorney. He's not the city attorney. He is not even the sergeant in charge. But on his own initiative, under a code section that I was not clear on, and our city attorney, John Barisoni, could not give me clearly, although I assume it does exist. According to John Barisoni, the sergeant has the power to determine that a citizen's complaint does not meet the level of violating an ordinance. Now, I've always thought that in a way this is true, that a police officer can say, look, you got a problem, go to the DA yourself. I'll take a report, but I'm not going to file a citation. And I have taken the police department to task for having me arrested on citizen complaints at the farmer's market when gentrification mistress Janet Blazer went after me for petitioning because she wanted to run off all the drummers and all the petitioners, and I was opposing this by circulating a petition and letting people know about it. But Sergeant Butchie Baker and the officers involved insisted they had to file these charges. They were lying. Or let us be gentle and say they were misinformed. It's hard to believe that Sergeant Baker, who's been around for a decade or more, was misinformed on such an issue. No, if an issue, as in my case at the farmer's market, you're in an open space that's open to the public, even if it's leased, if there are First Amendment issues, and you agree to haul away a petitioner on a citizen's complaint, the city isn't taking up a role for which it probably should be legally liable. And that was one of the reasons I said that they shouldn't even take the complaint. You should take the report from the merchant who wants to run off the First Amendment petitioner, but then say, you got a problem, go to court and try to get the district attorney to deal with it or get a restraining order. Baker didn't do this. He had me handcuffed and taken away. And he did the same thing a week and a half ago when he had me and Zoe Einbinder taken away from New Leaf Market area on the public sidewalk this time for blocking the sidewalk. These are serious issues when individuals who are engaging in peaceful public First Amendment activity trying to let the public know the kinds of backdoor deals that are going down here, the kind of essentially kidnapping of public spaces that's happening through a collusion between downtown association people, local businesses, and the police force, and not to mention the city attorney and the city redevelopment agency, under color of law, they get rid of individuals, like myself. They deter other people. They frighten away people. They use pain compliance holds, as they did on Zoe Einbinder, causing her pain, causing her fear, causing her to drop her tabling. She's no longer tabling there. She's afraid, as others are afraid to table because of this incident. I still do, but, you know, it means there's a cost. I have to worry. What's going to happen to me next? I mean, obviously the Constitution doesn't protect me. You know, obviously the police force is going to take a complaint from a merchant much more seriously, even if it has much less validity, than a complaint from myself, even though the music blasted out over the loudspeaker was excessive noise. I mean, Terry Butler acknowledged as much. He turned it down. Cottontails, the store across the street, complained about the excessive noise at an earlier point. And they got the music turned down for a period of time, or actually turned off, I believe. So I wasn't the only one concerned about it. There is a differential set of standards used in town. I'm not telling people anything they don't know. It's just being demonstrated so visibly downtown. So let's hear some interviews on the subject while we're hoping to get a call in from far away. I'm not sure if we're going to get those calls tonight. It may be that the folks down there haven't been able to get through, lost our number, or maybe they're going to call another time. But this may fill the gap, and I think it's of interest. Again, this is February 6th, and we're hearing interviews around the planter at New Leaf Market.
Apparently, last night...
They're going to drop the nuke right there.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, last night, apparently, I'm told by... You were telling me that, that there was some incidents that happened here last night?
Yeah, you can tell somebody that stuff. I've been told you once.
Okay, you want me to just repeat what you said, or... I'll do it. You look a little tired there, man. Well, it's better, though, because you were a witness. So, you were here last night, right?
Yeah.
And you observed a police officer, a sergeant, and a lieutenant, as well as a CSO surveilling the group?
Yeah.
And you were here for about, how many hours were you here for?
All night.
Yeah, the whole day.
All day, all night.
And you say that a ticket was given and also an individual was taken away on a warrant.
No, the person was taken away on obstruction of movement on the sidewalk.
And did you see, where was this person supposedly obstructing movement?
Walking down the sidewalk, I thought.
And was this a person in middle-class dress or somewhat informally garbed, like the, you know, or wearing younger...
He was a kid.
Okay. Now, do we know who this photographer is?
No, I don't know who he is.
How's it going, man? Who are you photographing for?
My program.
Which one?
It's
Learning Center. Oh, cool, man. Okay, so we have a man who, from the Learning Center, doing a little videoing. All right. What's your name, sir?
I'm Professor Lloyd.
And Professor, you are doing a video downtown on the Skills Center, is that right?
Yes.
And what, is this with UCSC or Cabrillo or?
No, it's an international outreach ministry.
I see, so you're with a religious group.
Yeah.
And what do you think of this idea that these two businesses are going to set up a fence around here and remove all the public and put their own customers and tables here?
I think they're encroaching on the peace of the community by doing so, because I think Santa Cruz belongs to everybody. Everybody has the right to enjoy the lush and the peace of the community. Therefore, I think we all should come together as an army and intercept their decision that they have made concerning encroaching on the peace. This is a tourist region, and by doing so, we are unleashing a spirit of strife and confusion that will bring about more animosity among the people.
Thank you very much. Your name again?
Professor Lloyd.
Thank you, Professor Lloyd. Okay, and come a little closer. What's your name?
Elijah Beck.
And Elijah, you say you had an encounter with the police here yesterday?
Yeah, I was stopped for obstructing a sidewalk, and when they couldn't find a photo identification on me, they took me down to the jail. And
left the jail down there to the police station?
The jail for 6 hours, pending proper identification.
Now, are you a big-time criminal?
No, sir.
Are you wanted in 6 states for rape, murder, and spitting on the sidewalk?
No, sir.
I didn't think so. Now, so they held you for 6 hours, they checked your record, they could find nothing, right?
Correct.
So, and you were charged with what?
Well, it was obstructing a sidewalk, but it became some kind of intoxication deal where they just kept me in there until I was sober. But I wasn't intoxicated.
And had you had any drinks at all?
No, none.
Did they claim you were intoxicated on alcohol or something else?
Something that they couldn't properly identify.
And where did this happen? Where exactly were you arrested?
In front of Juice World on Pacific.
And we're looking at Juice World right now. We're about 30 or 40 feet from it. Were you obstructing the sidewalk? In what sense? How did this happen? Tell me how this came about.
Police officers stated that people were obstructing the sidewalk and needed to move towards the street more. And after a few attempts, I was arrested for obstructing the sidewalk.
So were you, in fact, intending to stop people from walking by?
No, not my intention at all.
And can you show us, hey, Seal, can you show us where you were standing so we can get a sense of how viciously you were obstructing the sidewalk? Can you walk over and show me?
Yeah.
You're standing, you know, in a place that could be obstructing the sidewalk. Were you facing people, or were you looking toward the street?
And I had a backpack on that they also took, and I don't think I'll be able to get back because you need a photo identification to claim your gear. So, don't you down at the police station?
So they took your backpack, and did you refuse to move once they asked you to move?
No.
So how much sidewalk was available for people to walk on?
3.5 feet.
And what time of day was this?
It was around 9:15 at night.
And this was yesterday?
Yes.
Now, how long had you been down here?
Like 5 or 6 days.
And how long had you actually been physically present that time?
About 30 minutes.
And how many police officers were involved with this whole situation? Two. Was there a sergeant and a lieutenant, a sergeant and an officer, a CSO, do you remember?
Sergeant and officer.
And Spider, you were a witness to this? You're nodding?
Sergeant Baker.
Sergeant Baker and another police officer. Did you observe this arrest? You're nodding. Did you feel that, and again, your name is?
Elijah.
Do you feel that Elijah was blocking the sidewalk?
No.
Can you approach a little bit? I'm sorry.
I will say this, I'm not defending what the officers did, but he did give warning 4 times. He said anybody else still in the sidewalk will be ticketed. And he said something, and as Elijah started to move across the street to get out of the way, like they told him, they just chose him out of everybody.
Do you think it was sort of a targeted token arrest?
Yeah, it was just something that they could say, yeah, we're giving citations, we're doing our job properly, and it's just a bunch of horse
crap. And actually,
crap.
Once he was over here on the other side of the street, they came and got him from this side of the street. Like, they pulled him out of the crowd once he was over here and arrested him.
Wow. And your name is?
Emily.
And Emily, you were here as well?
Yeah.
And did you observe him where he was before? When did you first notice that there was some police activity around this situation?
All day.
All day long. They sit down here and they stand here and they watch us and they stare at us and they waste taxpayers' money. Just like they come and scrub the street twice a day right here in this area. They come and spray the sidewalk down twice a day.
Nowhere else
but here. They don't even spray down half the sidewalk anywhere else at all, but then they come spray this area twice.
They eat food. They don't even wash off around the places where they eat food.
They spray down just where we're at. You know, and that sounds pretty, and then they claimed the other day, I went in and talked to them about it, and they said, oh, this is for something else. That was done as part of his morning.
And that was a February 6th interview with Elijah and others, including Spider, down on the sidewalk in front of New Leaf Market, showing you the kind of harassment that happens to people who are just associating normally but are being targeted by people like Sergeant Butchie Baker, who apparently delights in spending hours videoing people so he can go after them, even if they're at a political table where basic and there's an elevated level of responsibility not to go after people who are specifically engaging in political speech, but he also goes after young people who are just trying to associate and assemble in public on the sidewalks. Well, with us now on the air, we have Jenny Jett of Rainbow Energy Systems and the Isla Vista Encampment. Hi, Jenny.
Hi, how are you doing?
Good. Speak up a little louder. We have a kind of a bad connection.
Okay.
That's good. And I talked to you earlier after learning that there was, an encampment began 2 weeks ago down at Isla Vista, but there was sort of a much longer history behind that, right?
That's correct.
Tell me a little bit about what's going on down there for homeless people in Isla Vista and how this encampment came about.
Okay. Well, basically, do you want to start with a little bit of the history prior to that?
Definitely.
We did have what was called Teepee Village many years ago. Maybe some listeners up there were down here then and can remember that. And there was a store in town that actually sold teepees. And at that time, there was many empty lots in the town. But there was a certain area that people went to and, kind of hung together. And, I guess it went on for probably maybe 10 years, something like that.
Try to speak up a little bit more.
It went on for about 10 years, and then there started to be complaints about it. And so basically what happened was the sanitary district were the enforcers at the time. So they said that they wanted to enforce because there was actually no bathroom there.
And this was, what, in the 80s, or?
Well, it was in the 70s, and I think it was finally shut down in about 1983.
Mm-hmm.
And so at the time, the park district here supported the village, and so they actually tried to do a recall on members of the sanitary district.
And how many people were a part of the village?
Oh, there were probably, I can't remember exactly, probably about 20.
And you were around during those days?
Yeah, I was around during that time.
Mm-hmm.
So what happened was that they both decided to back off of each other and let the county board of supervisors decide the issue. And unfortunately, the county board of supervisors voted 4-1 against keeping Teepee Village. So Teepee Village went away.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was basically the history of that, and right after that, I believe that they made the ordinance against sleeping or camping in public places.
And
right now, what's going on right now, mm-hmm, was that, of course, there's nothing in our area. There is a shelter in Santa Barbara. It's quite crowded, and it's a ways away from us, so. And a lot of people, we live in Isla Vista. We don't, we don't want to go to Santa Barbara.
Now, how far away is Isla Vista from Santa Barbara, and how many?
Approximately 15 miles.
And how many people, this is a university town, right?
It's right next to the university. There's mostly students here.
Uh-huh.
And it's become very crowded you know, the university is enrolling more and more students, and there's a lot of people that are homeless right now who supported the landlords in this town for many years. When there were a lot of vacancies, when the chips were down for the landlords, you know, we were all here paying our rent. Mm-hmm. And but because of supply and demand, a lot of people have been forced to the street. And this has been going on, and there's really nothing that could be done. There's camping tickets and all this. And finally, what happened, starting on Christmas night, a 26-year-old homeless man died. And within 3 weeks of that, one of our good friends named Deva Redwood, who is a full-blooded Navajo Indian and a really good musician and well-liked by a lot of people, he actually died in the hospital. So it kind of threw, you know, it kind of threw everybody into a spin. And we have been trying through all the normal channels over the past, over the past 2.5 years, I've been to all kinds of meetings, town hall meetings, redevelopment agency meeting, park district meeting. They actually formed a homeless task force. All the homeless people went to the meetings and said, what we need is a campground. That's what we need.
We call it the homeless task farce up here.
I said, where did you get this name from? And you said, where's your AK-47? Uh-huh. And then the homeless task force listened to everybody say that they wanted a campground, and then they proceeded to do everything but. And so there was a lot of frustration and everything, and finally people just said, okay, we're just going to go camp in the main park. And that's what we did. So,
and the main park is?
The main park is called Anasquaro Park.
Anasquaro Park.
Markets and everything. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, the police were actually, even though prior to that the police had been a little bit heavy-handed, let's say, and, you know, we tried to talk to that. We had some prominent members of the community were told by the homeless people what was going on. They went and talked to the police, and they had backed off a little bit, and then we were in the main park for, I believe, 12 days.
Uh-huh.
And during that time, the police were pretty okay. You know, they said, okay, well, you're doing your thing and you're keeping it. And there was a great spirit in the place. Everybody teamed together, kept the place clean. There weren't any arguments. And
how about drugs and alcohol?
There are people that drink, but we figured it up today, about probably half the people that were there don't drink at all.
Mm-hmm. What about the community? How did they regard this?
Well, there was an awful lot of student support for it. You know, people came by and said, here's some food. I called a few sororities and said, hey, if you have any leftover food instead of, you know, throwing it out, can you bring it by? So, you know, a lot of them did that. And it was really a good time. But eventually, they kept saying, eventually, we're going to arrest you. And the police did come and warn us. They said, look, tonight's the night. You know, you either got to figure out what you're doing or go.
What the police have done up here in Santa Cruz is they went after Camp Paradise, and they were constantly warning them, but then they never carried through because Camp Paradise refused to move and said, okay, well, you want to arrest us, then I guess we'll go to jail with you. And the police never came. What drove away Camp Paradise eventually was the flood, and then the failure of the city to come through on its plans where they were going to provide alternate, at least ideas for campsites that the Camp Paradise could rent. And you had folks coming by giving what did you call your camp?
We just really didn't have a name for it. No, we didn't. We were just there.
Mm-hmm. Do you still not have a name, or?
Well, some people called it a homeless encampment.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't really have a name. No, we didn't name it.
Mm-hmm.
And right now we've moved over to the original TP Village site.
Mm-hmm.
So now the park district now calls it TP Park.
Mm-hmm.
And so, but we're now calling it TP Village again.
So. You had a mixed group of folks, some of whom use drugs, some of whom you drink, some of whom don't, and yet things seemed to work pretty well.
Oh, everything was fine, and we did get, you know, because of publicity and everything, there were some people that came from out of town, and you know, they came in there and they were, you know, obviously drunk, and they said, hey, we're here to, I, you know, introduce myself to them. I said, you know, hi, how are you doing? What's your name? And, you know, this kind of thing. And you know, they were pretty drunk, and they said, well, we're here to party. And I said, well, you know, that's all well and good, but we're trying to do something here, you know, and we're not partying, and we're actually, alcohol is illegal in that park. So they were pretty, you know, everybody that happened on several occasions.
And they
were pretty cooperative, you know, and even people from this town that were, you know, there were some incidents like that, but mm-hmm. you know, we just told them, hey, straight up, mm-hmm. we're trying to do something here, and we don't want to blow it. So.
And then apparently you kind of, the police came in and sort of gave you threats or warnings or advice and got you to move to a much less prominent place, right?
They didn't really get us to move. They just said that we had to move from there. And so we just, you know, we went to a different place. It's more low-key. It's not right in the center of town. We've pretty much maxed out the space in there right now because it's also part of a Frisbee golf course. And that's actually turned out to be kind of funny because the course has a dog leg in it, and they have to shoot around these oak trees, and they keep going up in the trees, but by the time they come around, they can't see where it went. And so, you know, the homeless people saw where they went, and so it's actually kind of fun.
How many are you at this site?
Well, right now, I think there's about 15 people there. It's not an awful lot. There's also people that are, you know, still in their vans, which you can't drive a van into this place. So they're kind of around and about in the streets. And there's also some people that have had remote, further away locations. And, you know, so they're still out there. And, of course, there's people that are on probation that don't want to come anywhere near there.
Mm-hmm. And I know that in Santa Barbara, and we've actually had interviews with former public defender Glenn Maurer, who's successfully defended people in Santa Barbara, actually one ticket after another. He's gotten dismissed, and he recently won this fine case with Ridley and Cooper, where he was able to get an appeals court to find that the necessity defense, contrary to what the judge said, not only could be used, as the ICORN decision allows, but is also has to be found to be upheld and successful for folks who are living in their vehicles, at least for these two individuals who are in their vehicles, even though they had another option, which was, I guess, a religious camp, a religious church, a mission, but the mission wouldn't have allowed them to work. It wouldn't have allowed them to be in, to stay together as a married couple. It wouldn't have allowed them to bring their pets or to secure their vehicles. And so you have a kind of a, you know, the beginnings of a real legal revolution down there. And you also, as I understand, also have from Peter Marin, another writer and homeless activist down there, that there's a whole system of pressure being put on the city council in Santa Barbara and the county board of supervisors to allow people to sleep in vehicles in different places. So how does that impact you?
Well, we're doing our own thing. We're not really that much involved with Santa Barbara, because Santa Barbara City, like, we're part of an unincorporated area of Santa Barbara, uh-huh. in the county. And but we're watching that closely, and we're talking with the people that are doing that, and it's definitely a step in the right direction. It's brought a lot of attention to the homeless problem. And but like one of the guys said at one of the meetings, you know, they said, well, they're talking about letting people sleep in their vehicles, and he goes, what about the people that don't have vehicles? And so, you know, our thing, we would like to combine vehicles with you know, with our camp, so that we could share the same facilities, you know, if we ever got it permanent, if we ever had it built up, which is what we're trying to do. We really don't know how about going to try to make it into a permanent arrangement where we don't think that, you know, if we're going to have to be, you know, moved at some time. And we're trying to get together a strategy to do that. It's a real uphill battle.
How's the media been treating you? We're talking with Jenny Jett of the Isla Vista Homeless Encampment.
Hi. The university newspaper has been very truthful and pretty much accurate about what's been going on. We went to a park board meeting and asked them to have a meeting why we were still in camp at Anna Squirrel Park. They refused to even have a meeting. And so, you know, the headline there was basically that the park district refused to deal with the homeless. It is, IVRPD will not deal with homeless issues.
Now, the newspaper, for those who want to try to reach the internet, is the Daily Nexus of the University of California at Santa Barbara, right?
That's true. One park board member said to me, well, homeless is not part of the recreation and park, their recreation and park. And I said, you can't deny the fact that homeless people and parks go hand in hand. It's in your court. And
well, you know, up in Santa Cruz here, we have the same kind of problem. There's a very weak, diluted proposal for locating what's called the Santa Cruz Service Corps in the city parks, three of the city parks, which actually kind of is a recipe for disaster, because these three city parks are likely to be the focus of protest by neighbors. But they could rotate them around the neighborhoods to different places, different greenbelt areas. Santa Cruz has a huge amount of greenbelt space. But enviro-fascists, as some call them, like Keith Sugar, who always threatens to have me thrown out of council when I use the word fascist, because he's of Jewish ancestry, as I am, and somehow regards it as offensive to be have himself described in those terms. But we have a situation where, the parks are, considered to be some sort of special preserve for the gentry, for the upper middle class, for those who have who are residents and live in homes, or tourists. But
they hardly ever use them, as far as I see.
Right. Well, I mean, I'm not saying no. I think everybody has to, in the community has to share the parks. But the question is, you need obviously to have campgrounds where people can go, and if you don't have campgrounds, people have to camp where they need to, and if where they have to, and that's what ends up happening.
Now, one thing that a lot of people don't really realize is, people normally think in terms of shelter, like a big shelter. I think the last I heard, they've spent over $1 million. They spent $1 million to build the shelter in Santa Barbara. And it's very expensive to build a shelter. And you also have to have land for that, too. And what a lot of people don't really realize is that a lot of homeless people have dogs, and a lot of people say, well, why do they have a dog if they're homeless? And, of course, everybody can't have an across-the-board answer, but I've met, a lot of homeless people that I know that have dogs have them because they feel that, that's the only thing that loves them in the whole world. It's like a person, like a child to them. And they also are protection for when you're camping out, and you're not in a group, you're just in this bush or that bush, the dog will, wake you up if somebody's coming, and they also keep them warm at night. And so dogs and homeless people, there are people with dogs.
It's interesting.
Bring them in a shelter.
I know that in Santa Barbara, Linda Archer was raped and murdered back in 1997. Partially, it was blamed on the fact that police gave her a camping ticket, driving her out of the area where she was more safely camped into a less safe area. I don't know if you remember that particular.
I don't really remember.
Yeah, there was a story about that in Street Spirit, the homeless newspaper that comes out of San Francisco, about Linda Archer and Santa Barbara. And they actually declared a moratorium on the camping ban for a month or two just because of the danger of this character who was running around. I don't know if they ever caught the guy or woman or whoever it was. But it just shows, and in Santa Cruz we've said that, and even the Commission for the Prevention of Violence Against Women, a city commission, has said that, you need to have campgrounds, or you need to at least suspend the sleeping sections of the camping ban, because it's actually illegal in Santa Cruz to even fall asleep at night after 11 o'clock. You don't have to set up a tent, you don't have to be found with camping equipment, you just have to be found
Our ordinance
sleeping,
reads the same way. It reads camping / sleeping.
Right. What?
Because camping can get into. You could say, well, I didn't have a tent or I didn't have a stove, but it reads sleeping.
Well, we actually have several ordinances. I mean, we have the camping ordinance, and we have the sleeping sections of the camping ordinance. I know Santa Barbara, They don't use the sleeping ban in Santa Barbara anymore. They use the camping ban, which actually does require camping. But apparently they're successful, and I think they reinterpret it to mean sleeping or inhabiting a vehicle. So they play around with that. We're on the line here with Jenny Jett of Isla Vista, California. And Jenny, how can people reach you if they want more information about the encampment that you are working with?
I'll give you my phone number.
Go for it.
It's area code 805-685-2050.
It's 805-685-2050. What about an email address?
I don't have one right now.
Okay, I think they actually have another email address for somebody down there, and if people want it, they can give a call to 423-HUFF, 423-4833, which is Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom up here in Santa Cruz. Jenny, I'm going to thank you for being on the air and hope that you get in touch with some of those other encampments like Dignity Village.
Thank you for all the different contacts that you gave me today, and I will be calling these people to find out, you know, what they've done and what we can do further, and we're hoping to see this thing through to the end.
Hey, thank you very much, Jenny. And we'll do it again and tune in on Sunday at 10 to 1:30. Find yourself a computer and listen in.
I'm going to. I'm working on it. It crashed.
Gotcha.
I'm fixing it.
Okay. Thanks, Jenny.
Thanks a lot. Now.
Bye-bye. And we have a rare moment if anybody wants to rush in on the telephone. We have about 10 minutes before the show is over, actually about 9 minutes. We're going to give you about 30 seconds to think about it, because actually I don't think we're going to give you that much time. We're going to try to get a hold of Camp Paradise, or the remains or residue of Camp Paradise, and see if anything is happening in their neck of the woods, the Santa Cruz Service Corps. I want to get an update. I understand Larry Templeton went to City Council and had some rather strong sentiments. Let's see what we can find out here.
Santa Cruz Service Corps, this is Kay. Can I help you?
Hey, Kay. This is Free Radio Santa Cruz, and you're on the air with Bathrop Spears Broadsides.
Okay.
Hi.
Hello.
So what's happening there? Have you got any updates from the Santa Cruz Service Corps or Camp Paradise?
No, I don't, but if you call back, I can see if I can get Larry on the phone.
Well, we got about 8 minutes, so he hasn't got much time, but why don't you tell him to give us a call here at the free radio line, which is 427-FRSC, Free Radio Santa Cruz.
Okay.
Can you do that?
Sure, I will.
427-FRSC.
Okay. Doesn't he have that?
He might.
Okay.
All righty.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Yeah, I heard, we know that nothing came out of the City Council in terms of the resolutions to the drips and the drabs of letting Camp Paradise have, or not Camp Paradise, but the Santa Cruz Service Corps, if the Parks and Rec Department director found they met 8 different conditions, then they could stay for 15 days, or for 2 weeks, no more than 2 weeks in one of 3 parks. If the City Council ends up passing this law to second reading, which it probably won't, because I spoke last night with Mark Premack, who's the city council member, one of the 3 who introduced this resolution. Premack now says he does not support it. He's waffling and doubling back, and part of what he says is true, is that the whole thing has been reduced to impotence by the making it so small and limiting it in area, both in terms of the number of people, the amount of time, and also the areas that are allowed. Since only these 3 areas are allowed, they're going to get special irate criticism from nearby neighbors, which was probably anticipated by people like Sugar and Fitzmaurice, and maybe even people who proposed it, like Kennedy. And I hate to say Porter, but I think Porter's more likely to be naive than Machiavellian here, and it's hard to judge people's motivations, but certainly Porter has not gone to any of the other homeless activists, not fulfilled his pledge to end the sleeping ban, which he made to the Green Party, not even brought the issue before the City Council. So he's broken his word, and of course Fitzmaurice is a disgrace to the Green Party to begin with. He poses as a Green Party member, and every city council meeting every day violates the Green Party pledge to end sleeping bans that harass the human rights of homeless people. And we, of course, in Santa Cruz don't see any Green Party members standing up and criticizing him, I guess with the exception of Thomas Levitt and me. Levitt's been a Green Party member a lot longer, and I commend him for it, but the Green Party generally takes a complete dive on homeless issues as far as standing up to city and county power goes. Although they did take some steps earlier last year supporting Camp Paradise, and I commend them for that, now they need to get back to the issue of the broader homeless community and the need to have basic human rights respected for the homeless community. This is going to be particularly important because the armory is... It was officially scheduled to close on the 15th of March, but I think I learned from Becky Johnson, a video journalist and a homeless activist who's been doing surveying of homeless opinion out at the Homeless Services Center. She found that March 1st is actually the day when the winter shelter armory is closing, which means there'll be less than 40 spaces, 40 legal spaces on the floors of churches, always full throughout the summer last year and the spring and fall as well. So no legal places for the overwhelming majority of homeless people to go. And, of course, no advocacy and leadership from Ken Cole, the Homeless Services Center, who was once an advocate in Seattle, but now apparently spends his time pleasing the Homeless Services Center Board of Directors and hanging out with the bigots on KSCO radio station. It's kind of unfortunate. We do have some events coming up which might interest people. We only got about 5 minutes left, and I don't know if we're going to get a call from the Santa Cruz Service Corps, but they have meetings, I believe, still every 6 o'clock every Wednesday night, and they can be reached at 423-8636 in case you want to give them a call. There is a forum on the sleeping ban and rent control coming up next Tuesday. People are invited to come to that. That's on February 19th, second floor of the Veterans Building downtown, and that's at 846 Front Street. It's going to be suggested donations $5 to $10, but no one will be turned away. I'm going to be speaking there. Michael Schmidt, former CEO, Chamber of Commerce, candidate for Board of Supes, and homeless activist will also be speaking. Becky Johnson, community TV and local journalist, will be speaking. Larry Templeton, if we can get him there. He's sometimes a hard man to pin down. In fact, he hasn't showed up at the last 4 or 5 events that we've invited him to, and he's agreed to come to, hasn't been able to make it, or has had other problems, or just didn't show. But we're hoping we can come. And Donna Dice, Tenants' Rights Union of Santa Cruz. Rent control, folks. Rent control is what we need in Santa Cruz. We need somebody who's really going to do it, not somebody like Christopher Crone, who will raise the flag for rent control only around a special interest project like the Dolphin Lee Project, which essentially destroys the real prospects of affordable housing by giving all the money away of affordable housing for the Dolphin Lee Project, and essentially then leaving the rest of the entire community out in the cold and destroying more housing than it creates. There's going to be a meeting on February 17th on Sunday night at 7 o'clock, again in room 22 of the Veterans Hall of the Progressive Federation. The Progressive Federation is a group of different organizations that have come together. I've been sort of impressed with the numbers and the dedication of the Progressive Federation. They have been, to some extent, connected with this community awareness forums, one of which is the Sleeping Ban and Rent Control, mentioned to you before. It happens 2 days later on Tuesday night. But they're also concerned with broader attacks on human rights abuses in Santa Cruz, ranging from the war to rape to Native American rights. It's really a whole series of concerns, and they're meeting every Sunday night at 7 o'clock, again, in room 22 at the Veterans Hall. On Sunday, and that's going to be our next show, at 10 o'clock in the morning, long show, 3.5 hours on Free Radio Santa Cruz, that's what you're listening to, we're going to be having, covering the case of Jerry Henry. I mentioned it earlier, a man mercilessly harassed by the sheriff's deputies who continuing to vigorously pursue his appeals in court. I am essentially being prosecuted by the same city attorney who was at that time a district attorney and has been a judge, George Kovacevich. The same guy that went after Henry is now going after me for blocking the sidewalk. And that has to do essentially with my challenging the merchant agenda to privatize the sidewalk in front of New Leaf Market. And that I encourage people to continue to boycott the two restaurants, Sushi Now and Alibaba's Cafe, and not just boycott them, but tell them why you are boycotting them. Tell them you want to be a patron of their cafe, but you need to know that they're not going to collude with the Downtown Association and the City Council in driving away young people and poor people. You're not going to be a part of the scheme to essentially criminalize homeless and hippies in areas so that middle-class people who are nervous about the scene can be reassured. That's not the way that Santa Cruz should be going. Not the way for it to go. And also New Leaf Market, which refuses to speak out on this issue, should also be boycotted and told why it's being boycotted. we are boycotting you, Pacific Avenue's New Leaf Market, because you want to remain a silent spectator as they wash away poor people from the sidewalk and set up an iron wrought fence in front of your business that previously had public seating space. Without replacing that seating space anywhere on the mall, without giving people any place to go, without any kind of consultation with the people who are being driven away, and without any real public process throughout this whole situation. If you want to help with this campaign to bring this issue to the public fore, and also to end the sleeping ban and to deal with other human rights abuses against the homeless, and also a new project we're undertaking is Bad Cops. There's some folks who want to start looking into the records of bad cops. How many cops are getting the major amount of producing major lawsuits against the city, successful lawsuits? Why isn't the city attorney doing something about them? These are questions that need to be answered and that can be answered. Give a call to 423-HUFF, 423-4833. Be a part of the answer. Be a part of that solution, because you can be. And it really is important. And it's something that's happening in your community. You don't have to, wait around and make distant posturings so beloved of Marty Wormhout and John Laird and Chris Crone, who love to make these gestures toward foreign lands so far away, though, of course, they can't seem to get anything going about ending the bombing of Afghanistan. That's a little too controversial. Thank you very much. I'd like to see some peace action around town, and I'm hoping that we hear more from Cassandra and Amy about what their next action is to get some stuff going around that. I know that there was a Black Hawk Down movie showing protest that happened a week ago, and I think I got a fragmentary report on that, but haven't gotten sort of any new reports on that. I'm kind of curious what's been going on. The show is really due to end and is actually over now, but I'm going to keep on going until Uncle Dennis arrives in the theater. He's a bit late for some reason. This is From the Cream to the Dregs is the usual show time that he has here from 8 to 10. He's also the creator of Earth First News, which happens every weekday at 5:30 p.m. for 5 minutes, but it's quite a full 5 minutes, and I invite people to tune in to Free Radio Santa Cruz during that time. My show, as you know, is a twice-weekly show, or perhaps you don't know, 6 to 8 on Thursday evenings, and 10 to 1:30 in the afternoon on Sundays, and we broadcast at www.microradio.net. We had hoped to get a little input from Scott Immler down in Los Angeles on how cannabis clubs are being treated there, but maybe we'll be doing that on Sunday. Let's hear a little bit more from the hippie planter scene, and these are tapes from about a week ago, but they do cover some interesting aspects of what's happening there.
We're supposed to do that every day, but this has done something else. I was like, so saying that you just loved it to waste taxpayers' money. Well, now I've seen, they said that was just a special thing. It was only going to happen once. I've seen it 5 days in a row now.
So once a day, twice a day, sometimes twice a day?
Sometimes twice a day, sometimes three times a day I've seen.
Really? Now, is it, for the last 5 days, can you actually remember specifically that it has been twice a day for the last 5 days, or?
Well, I'm saying over, like, the past 10 days, it's been twice a day, like, five different days.
Right.
Out of that 10 days.
So there's been at least 10 incidents of washing in the last 10 days.
No, there's been 15 incidents of washing.
Right.
But sometimes it's twice a day.
Right. Well, you should suggest it be done with hot water and they provide soap. Then we can all have a good time.
What do they have brewing down there?
Yeah.
There's helicopters standing down there.
Yeah. I see several three squad cars. Maybe we should go investigate this activity.
Jerry's already down there talking.
Uh-oh. Can somebody go check that out? Take a look? Or I can go. Maybe someone watch the table.
I'm watching.
Okay. Say this again, Elijah. You say they took your backpack, and then in the jail you had a conversation with the deputy?
No, in the police station, when they were trying to write out the police report, he stated that the jail wouldn't accept my backpack as incoming, like, clothing and stuff to put on their, like, in their inventory, and then he had to keep it at the police station. I could claim it tomorrow, but I'm, like, looking at this paper, and it states I have to have an ID to get my stuff back, and the whole reason I was taken out of jail is because I didn't have an ID, and there's, like, pictures of my daughter and, like, personal belongings and things that are meaningful to me in there, and I'm kind of afraid.
Anyway, all you got to do is go down there and be able to prove to them exactly. You know, let's talk a bunch of stuff that would only you would know that's in your backpack.
Right. Then
they deny you, do, now you have a lawsuit, brother, because now they're you're dying legal rights.
So
you know what's in that backpack.
You say that the deputy made it, or which officer was it? Was this Sergeant Baker we're talking about, or another officer?
What's Sergeant Baker?
Baker. And what did Sergeant Baker say to you?
He said I won't be getting my personal belongings back.
So this sergeant took your belongings gratuitously, singled you out of a crowd, had you arrested for blocking the sidewalk, held you for 6 hours in jail, and now has actually confiscated your property. Is that right?
That's what he told me. And I was held under 647F.
647F is public intoxication, I think.
All right.
And we're talking about Elijah Beck here. Looking at the arrest report, it's about... So like 6:10 this happened, and there was no field, no breathalyzer, and you were arrested for intoxication, only no further proceedings are desirable. Was he intoxicated last night?
No, he wasn't intoxicated.
And you're a witness as well?
Yeah.
Your name is?
Ben.
Yeah, and he doesn't look intoxicated now, that's for sure.
No, he's not intoxicated.
I need new shoes.
Am I intoxicated? No.
Yeah.
You look happy. Thank you.
Absolutely.
It is about 1:10. There are 8 police officers here, you say?
About 8 police officers, yeah. I was just told by this gentleman right here.
Jerry, so what's happening? I see a number of squad cars there. You know what's going on?
That down host center was jam-packed. There's a couple sergeants in there. A couple deputies I've never seen. I was just talking to them because I'd seen the Del Mar sign lit last night. We were talking about the sign. They were talking about if everybody had their key to the host center. Who paid for that? And they told me it was half the police department and half